Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and part two of our interview with 99-year-old George Coburn of Oceanside, California. If you missed the first part, in which he goes into great detail about surviving the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, you can access that podcast at hometownheroesradio.com. George was fortunate to escape his sinking battleship then, to go home and surprise his mother, who thought he was a ghost. She had believed that he was killed on December 7th. And when he returned to sea, it was aboard the cruiser USS Louisville, a ship with a pretty extensive history. As soon we'll be able to read in a book George is working on with retired history professor Linda Dudick. And your battle station on the Louisville was the gun director?
Yes. I wasn't any aircraft director originally, and they moved me down to main battery director. And I worked there for a long time. I'm probably responsible for killing more Japanese than most guys that were in the service, because we went in intent on destroying their facilities and eliminating as many of the Japanese as we could. Well, we had different classes of ammunition, and we used armor piercing to destroy concrete emplacements. We used fragmentation bombs to destroy people. And a salvo from our ship was like 9 300-pound bombs landing in a compact area, and to the people on the beach must have been devastating. I remember one time at Saipan, that's in the Marianas, a little north of Guam, I had direct communication with a spotter on the beach, and he told me, says, bring your salvos down 300 yards. I said, if I bring my salvos down 300 yards, I'm going to be shooting my own people. And he says, no, he says, they've fallen back. You'll be okay. He says, the Japanese, they're tying their bayonets onto sticks, and they're creeping up through the brush and stabbing our guys. So anyway, it's the only time I ever challenged a spotter. I brought the salvos down, and he says, you got them or you need them.
Well, and that's the ugly reality of war, is that it is costing lives. But a move like that, to trust that communication and fire in that position, you're claiming enemy lives, but you're saving American lives, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. And I can't say that I regretted what I did. I think I did a damn good job. You know, when I got commissioned, usually orders for transfer followed or came right simultaneously with the commission. Mm-hmm. Didn't happen with me. I stayed on the Louisville. And I always wondered, was it because they couldn't find anybody that would have me? Or anyway, I stayed on the Louisville, and I wasn't unhappy with that, but it did lead to one incident that the gunnery officer, same guy that I talked to earlier about my commission, says, Coburn, I hear you're fraternizing with enlisted men. He says, you're an officer now. You gotta watch that. And I says, Commander, those people were my friends. They're still my friends. But don't worry about it impairing the output of work. We'll get the job done. He let it pass and never heard anything more about it.
Well, you describe for us the impact that one of your salvos could have on the land. I mean, there are also times where you're firing at enemy ships, and the last battle line we've ever had in war you were part of in Leyte Gulf.
Yes. Our surface engagements were really limited, but we did have that big battle of Surigao Strait, which was, I don't know, I've read that there were more military equipment present and with ships and torpedo boats, destroyers. They awful job on those torpedo boats. They had to run in and launch their torpedoes, and they tried to use smoke clouds and stuff to obscure them, but smoke doesn't impair a radar. But they suffered a lot of casualties.
Well, and your ship had casualties too. And there was one time where you were one of them. You have a Purple Heart.
Yes, that's true. Was Kamikaze, a newly developed weapon. We got our first acquaintance with it while we were down in Leyte Gulf, and that's in the Philippines. And we had a near miss. I don't know what detracted them, but the pilot raised his point of aim, and he went over the top of us and crashed nearby in the sea.
And is that something you could see from where you were?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're watching him come at you.
Yeah. Then on two consecutive days in Lindig Island Gulf, which is north of Manila in the Philippines, they were planning a landing, and we were doing shore bombardment. We got hit. The Kamikaze hit the faceplate of turret 2, which was heavily armored, but the shock of the explosion separated the top of the turret from the faceplate, and we lost a lot of men in that turret. We also lost some people on the bridge, because fireball rolled up across the bridge and people got burned badly. And the only fire controlman that got lost in action after Pearl Harbor happened there, he was a young fella and unrated, but he was in the anti-aircraft director. And a blade from the propeller of the Kamikaze broke off and flew up and sliced through the weather shield around the director, hit this kid in the back and broke his back, and he died as a result.
Did you know him?
Yeah, sure.
What was his name?
I don't name victims.
Okay. Sure. Was that Kamikaze attack when you were hit by shrapnel?
I was in the director, but this kid was on the other side of the equipment from me. The one that was really important to me was off Okinawa. And I was in the wardroom, and the call went out to set conditions such and such, which was for anti-aircraft work. And so I started out from my battle station, which under that anti-aircraft protocol, I was back to the anti-aircraft director. I saw this guy coming in. He was about 5,000 yards out, maybe. And I watched him for an instant. And they were hitting him, and pieces of his fuselage were getting knocked off and splashing in the water. And I thought, he's not going to make it. But he did. And I had turned and started up the ladder to go up to the director when he hit. And we had a catapult with a scouting observation plane on it. He hit the plane, and the wreckage of that plane and his plane hit the forward stack of the ship and folded it over. And then luckily all that junk went on over the side and lit in the sea. So we didn't have a fire aboard. But he had a bomb, and the bomb went off, and I retained a few pieces of it for a while. But I was lucky. I don't know exactly where I was, because even to this day, I have absolutely no memory of the explosion or what happened in the next few minutes. I think I know approximately where I was, and there were holes I could put my fist through in the steel bulkhead. And if I was there, I was darn lucky. Because I had a little bit of shrapnel in each foot, and I had a piece on the cheek of my butt, and I had another piece in the back of my scalp. But none of them was bigger than a BB, just tiny little fragments. And so once again, it was Lucky George.
So where did your memory pick back up there? Were you knocked unconscious, do you think? Or you think that memory is just disappeared?
I was still walking around. But then when I came back to consciousness, I was lying on a bench that ran alongside of the wardroom. And I don't have no memory at all of how I got there or when. They put me in my bunk. And I hurt everywhere. there wasn't a square inch of me that didn't hurt. And this was a lesson on drugs to me. They gave me a shot of morphine. And about a minute later, all that pain was gone. And I've thought about that a lot of times. I think, there's all kinds of pain in this world. And I can see how somebody could get addicted to that stuff.
Well, and here in 2019, you're talking about Lucky George again. What about then, when you're getting treated there and recovering from where you've been hit all over your body? Do you feel thankful that you survived? Do you realize that could have been it?
Oh, I realized it could have been it, yes. I don't know, I just accepted, like, I knew a guy who, one of his favorite expressions is, what is, and that's the way I felt about it, what is. I mean, it happens, and it's not within your control, and so you go with the flow.
And he's still going with the flow at age 99, but we're not done yet with George Coburn. A little added perspective as he looks back on all of it. And I think you're going to get a kick out of how he met his late wife, Jenny, during World War II. Don't forget to find photos at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.